Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Ted Maxwell, and this is the Engagement Hour, where we talk about trying to get you involved. I've got Matt Neely behind the glass, always keeping me on time and on target. And that's a bigger challenge, I think, than most people recognize. Jump in Tucson, it's hard to believe, but Jump in Tucson's now in its 10th month. I mean, I can't believe it's almost a year, Matt, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Congratulations.
But the beauty of this show is it's five different days. It was planned to be five different hosts, but unfortunately, Dr. Ed Ackerley's still having to pull the weight and carry two shows. He's got Monday's show where he talks about the wonders of the University of Arizona, and then Friday's show is focused on identifying and exposing you to successful businesses in the community that have started here, grown here, and continue to flourish here. You've got this Tuesday Engagement Hour, and then on Wednesday, you've got Grant Kruger, who's spins that fine line between food and politics. And then Tom Moulton hosts Thursday, where you can learn more about the attractions and the things that go on in the city of Tucson than you may know. I know personally, I've learned about a lot of different museums, a lot of different places you can go that I had no idea even existed in Arizona. So we couldn't have done it without you, Matt. You are the one cog that is the similarity.
Great stories 5 days a week on Jump in Tucson. Absolutely. And everybody brings something interesting from their own personal standpoint. Box. That's really cool.
Yep. And I need to make sure to thank the Southern Arizona Leadership Council and Jim Click. It's been their support throughout this year that's kept us going for 10 months. If there's anybody out there that's interested in supporting the Engagement Hour, you know, just give us a call. It'd always be great. SLC, I brought on some members, and we're going to do that again today. Today I've got Ted Hinderocker with me. Ted, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ted.
It's been great because to me, the Southern Arizona Leadership Council has a lot of successful businessmen and women who are all engaged on trying to make this region a better place, and they get involved. So, Ted, one of the things, this show is really about trying to get people engaged, trying to get them to do and be involved in their communities. And so I always like to start by just asking my guests to kind of tell their stories. I mean, you're displaying the Block A on your shirt today. You're a huge supporter of the region. How did you get here? Were you born and raised here? I know your brother and you are both actively involved. Can you just kind of give us your story and how you got involved in community engagement?
Yeah, sure. I was actually born in Los Angeles and raised in Indio, California, and came out here to go to school in 1974. And I went to law school, went to undergrad at the U of A, and then graduated from law school, went to San Diego for a couple of years, Phoenix, and came back to Tucson because I love Tucson. My involvement in the community really started with the Tucson Children's Museum. And I had small kids. You know, we went to the museum, and I was on the board with Dorothy Finley and Beth Walkup, who ran it when they moved from the old YWCA on University Boulevard into what was then the library for the city. So I was on that board and became president of that board. My other involvement with the community really started with like you say, the U of A. I started with the Tucson Alumni Club and ended up on the National Alumni Council board, did a lot of volunteer lobbying on behalf of the university, and then was on the University of Arizona Foundation for about 18 years, was board chair for a couple of years of that. So that's been a big stretch of where I got involved in the community. And, of course, SALC. I'd read about you guys and what you were doing, and I'd always sort of been, you know, a little bit of a political junkie, and it sounded like a lot of fun. So I joined that about 10, 12 years ago, and I'm on the board, and you guys have a wonderful organization, and I'm pleased to be part of it.
Well, the public policy space is always an interesting one. It makes for good radio because there's a lot of discussions of what's good, what's bad, who's right, who's wrong. But to say you're a political junkie is kind of an understatement because you are. You're definitely engaged. I know there's been so many issues we've talked about. You're currently one of the, you're on our board, and you used to be a chair of the governance focus area, which deals with all the stuff in this political space. But a couple of years ago, you got really engaged in trying to solve and change our election system. And can you kind of just talk about how that first, you got aware of it and how it came about?
Yeah, we have a government focus group at SALC, and one of the things that came up in the government focus group was the the problem partisan elections and just rank partisanship really in our election process. Now, this was 2012, so it was not as bad then as it is now. It has become significantly worse. But in 2012, members of that focus group, and I'm talking about Cy Shore and Sarah Smallhouse predominantly, we became involved in a campaign that would bring top two elections, open primary and top two general elections, the state of Arizona. We lost, but we basically ran out of money because the opposition ran numerous lawsuits against us, and we expended all our money on the lawsuits. And then when it came to the general election, there was another infusion of big money on the other side, and we didn't have any money to compete. So we weren't successful.
Do you remember what the percentage of independents was back then?
I don't know the exact percentage, but it was significantly smaller than the current percentage.
I want to say it was down about the 20s. I don't remember for sure, but I do know when that first attempted was much lower in case. And that was a statewide initiative, and you had supporters both here in Tucson and in Phoenix, as I recall.
That's correct. And we had Paul Johnson spearheaded that effort, and a lot of the same people that are involved now were involved then. Grady Gamage was very involved at that point. But you're right. I mean, the political parties have been leaking oil here for a long time. People are leaving the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and they're re-registering as independents. And currently, independents are the largest political bloc in the state of Arizona. It's the 34%. And nationally, I think it's even higher than that. But we're not represented in the state legislature. There's not a single independent that currently is in the state legislature, and I don't think there ever has been. And the reason is the primary system, which is what we're trying to solve.
So this is a good point to take a break. We've got your background, how you became involved. If you were listening to Wake Up Tucson, you heard some thoughts on 140 there. You've heard me talk about it before. Proposition 140 is one of 13 ballot propositions this year. So make sure you get your study in early and learn. And this is going to take the day-to-day to try to expose you to the details of Prop 140, what it is and what it's not. And that's make elections fair is what they're trying to accomplish. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. And I'm glad that Matt's spending some upbeat Springsteen today. It keeps everything lively and keeps us going. Glad you tuned in today. 13 ballot initiatives are on the ballot. Two of them are citizens' initiatives. 11 were referred by the legislature. And we're talking today with Ted Hinderacher, who's a partner at Hinderacher, Rao, and Wiseman PLLC. So it's got to put that out there too. You're not only a political junkie, but you're engaged, as is your family. Your brother's also very involved in some of the aspects as now a superior court judge. I believe he's still holding that.
He's a federal court judge, and as such, he can't get involved in the political aspects.
He can't be involved in the political aspects, but he was. And I first got to know him when he was on the city charter and committee that was reviewing the possibility of changing the elections. And he was a good supporter of that because maybe Prop 140, and we'll get to that later today, may also be an avenue to change how the city of Tucson, the only city that does partisan elections, is allowed to accomplish their elections. So Prop 140 started as Make Elections Fair. There's always a name behind it, and you've been working on this for probably 2 years, maybe more. You said you ran a top two system that never really, it got to the ballot, but by the time it got there was just no funding available to mount any kind of campaign. So what is, maybe if you want, you don't have to talk about the specific differences, but why do you believe this has the opportunity to not only pass, but actually improve our election process for all the citizens in the state of Arizona?
So to answer that, I think you have to look at what the problem is. And really there are two primary problems, no pun intended, that we're attempting to address with Proposition 140. And one is the first one's the fairness problem. So 34% of the voters in the state of Arizona are not affiliated or not registered with a political party. They're either independents or they're party non-declared voters. So more than one-third, that's the largest voting bloc in the state of Arizona. Yet candidates and voters that are independents are largely shut out of the political process. And here's why. If you're a candidate as an independent, you need 6 to 7 times the number of signatures just to make the ballot as a Republican or Democrat. So as a Republican or Democrat, you need 6 to 7,000 signatures. It's a function of the number of voters in the last primary election. If you're independent, you need over 42,000 signatures to make the ballot. And those signatures are hard to get. If you've ever tried to gather signatures, I mean, we were gathering signatures for this initiative. People don't want to talk to you. I mean, they're hard to get. And that's a reason that there are no independents in the state legislature. I don't believe that there ever have been. You also don't get the same amount of clean election money. You don't have the same access to voter rolls. You're listed last in the ballot. There are a number of problems and hurdles for an independent candidate to make the ballot. And if you're a voter, you can vote in a primary election currently, but you have to elect a ballot if you want to vote by mail. And most independents don't. Only about 10% of independents currently participate in the primary system. So if you have 34% of the voters are independents and 10%, that's about 3.5% of independents that actually participate in the primary system.
There's no doubt that's one of the hindrances in our current system. Yes, you can participate as an independent, and some people say, well, it's on your responsibility, but why should it be on your responsibility if everybody else who's a member of the party, it's automatic? You know, we've got, that's, I think, some of the equalization. It's a question that I was thinking of today, and I'm sorry to hit you with the question, but I don't know the answer to this one. Can an independent walk in on the primary to the polls and just ask for a ballot, either Republican or Democrat, or do they have to do it in advance?
I don't know the answer to that, Ted. I know that with mail-in ballots, you have to request it in advance. I think you can walk in.
Not the presidential preference election.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. And presidential preference election, period, you can't participate. Yet all the voters, all of us, independents, Republicans, Democrats, we all pay for these primaries, do we not?
We do, and that's part of the problem is, you know, all the taxpayers pay for these partisan political primaries. They're essentially run by the political parties, yet the largest voting bloc is excluded from even participating in the primary. So, again, that's part of the fairness problem. So the other problem is very much related, and it's, you know, in a representative democracy, the candidate that you elect is supposed to represent the entire constituency, right, in their district. But that's not how it works. You know, currently, I think there are 5 out of 30 legislative districts that are deemed to be competitive districts. So 80-some percent are not competitive districts.
And the irony of it is we already have 6 state senators. We know who they are going to be because, so even though 5 are competitive, there's at least one out there that's not deemed competitive, which normally is 4% or less swing, which is already decided. 6 do not have primaries. I mean, generals.
Yeah,
and a couple didn't even have primaries.
Yeah, and the reason that is because the districts, you know, the non-competitive districts have a preponderance of Republican or Democratic voters. So if you're a Republican running in a non-competitive Republican district, all you need to do is win the primary and you're automatically going to win the general. And if you're a Democrat, the same thing applies on the other side. So it's no wonder that candidates from the party that's not in the majority in the district don't run a large percentage of the time because they have no choice. And even those candidates that do run, it's an exercise in futility. So what we have then, I think the 2024 primary elections, the last data I read said that there were like 26% of the voters actually participated. So if you split that in half, roughly 13% in the Republican and 13% in the Democrat, you have 13% of the voters that are selecting over 80-some percent of the candidates. And who are these voters that vote in the primary elections? Well, they tend to be the most ideologically extreme voters on the spectrum. So if you're a candidate and you're running in a non-competitive district, you're going to get voter rolls and you're going to find out who voted in the last election. And it's going to be that 13% of Republicans or 13% of Democrats. And those are the only voters that matter to you. Those are the only voters you're going to talk to. You're not going to listen to the opinions of anybody else. And when you get in the legislature, you're going to reflect the views of those 13% of the voters. Now, the future, the Center for the Future of Arizona ran a Gallup poll study, and it found that in the state of Arizona, there's almost unanimity in terms of our values and what we consider to be primary problems that need to be solved. You know, it's education, it's border security and immigration reform, it's infrastructure, it's water, it's the economy. But yet those aren't the focus. That is not the focus of the legislature and the bills. The bills that come out talk about, you know, bathrooms and gun carry in universities and things that are not that important to most of us. So we've got a system that actually encourages polarization and discourages bipartisan cooperation that's actually going to fix our problems. So that's the reason for Proposition 140.
Yeah, that makes good sense on that front, because the numbers are what I like to point out, and this has right now been a very positive thing on 140. We're going to keep it this way till the bottom there, then we'll get back to some of the more difficult questions. But what I like to point out in those districts, and there's, like I said, six legislative Senate candidate districts don't have primaries. There's almost an equal number, if not more, House seats that don't have generals, which means if you're in the minority or you're an independent, you never get to vote for your state representative, ever.
And if you're in the minority, even if you can vote for your state representative or your state senator, your vote really doesn't count because the outcome is preordained.
And we get into a redistricting conversation there, and how it's done, and what the, and we know there's a lot. There's six different rules that drive redistricting, and overall, I think it's beneficial to have both parties with some representation in the legislature. The question is, how do you make it more competitive, fair, get the independents involved earlier, and then get it. And I think 140, as you describe it, will start taking those steps. One thing I do need to correct is there are actually more Republicans registered in the state of Arizona there than are independents, but it's 35% versus 34%.
I know in Maricopa, in the state of Maricopa,
yes,
the independents are in the majority. And the projections were that by the time the election came around, there would probably be more independents, although I'm not sure if that's the case, because as you get closer to the election, both parties run registration campaigns.
Right. So you've talked about the fairness. You've talked about good representation. What other are the points that you believe? And again, you were working on this for 2 years. There were a lot of variations of what was going to go to the ballot. But the one consistent thing throughout that process, I believe, was the open primary system.
Yeah, and that's what Proposition 140 does. It does a couple of things. It fixes the fairness problem so that all candidates and all voters are treated the same. And by doing that, it also fixes the representation problem, because even though you still have gerrymandered districts, because you have an open primary, it allows the candidate and incentivizes the candidate to talk to a wider swath of voters. So you don't hear just the voices of the 13% that currently vote in the Republican or Democratic primaries. You listen to the voices of all your constituents, and that frees you up from being primaried, if you will, if you don't strictly adhere to party doctrine. And it also incentivizes bipartisan cooperation. So when you get in the legislature, instead of just sticking with your caucus, you can actually work together with candidates and elected officials on the other side of the aisle to get things done. I mean, I did an internship in the state legislature a long time ago when I was in college, but at that time, you actually had like a Southern Arizona caucus, and you had a university caucus, and they were made up of Republicans and Democrats. And people caucused, the elected official caucused over the problems that we needed to address. You don't see that now. You have to strictly adhere to the party line, and if you don't, you're primaried and you're out in the next election for doing your job, which is supposed to be to represent your entire constituency.
It's like you've also pointed out, one thing that we've never seen is the independents in the legislature. So there's been a lot of conversation so far, touting the benefits of 140. We're going to come back and address some of the issues and arguments against rolling back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and you're listening to The Engagement Hour. We'll see you after the break. Welcome back, Tucson. This is Jump in Tucson, and you're listening to The Engagement Hour. It's important to remember as we come into an election season, there's a lot of vitriol, there's a lot of comments, but we are all members of a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality. And with that comes those rights and responsibilities to debate, to discuss, to serve the community. Some people serve through service as first responders, others as educators. You've got folks that serve in the military. We've got our elected officials. And then we've got folks who lead and work nonprofit community organizations to try to help all those around. And then you've got those who just get engaged. Today, my guest, Ted Hinderacher, is one of those. He's part of the team, and it's a pretty fairly large team that's leading Prop 140, Make Elections Fair. And to this point, Ted, we've kind of talked about what it is, okay? But I want to take what it's not. And it's not necessarily that it's not there in it, but it's what it's not. What I hear on a routine basis is, oh, Proposition 140, Make Elections Fair, that's the ranked choice voting one. I hate that idea.
And that's not what it is. It absolutely is not ranked choice voting. It's not top two. It's about fixing the problem in the primaries. And look, Ted, if you want to, if it's a lot easier to run a no campaign than it is to run a yes campaign.
That's one of the challenges of getting anything through.
All you got to do is create enough confusion. And that's what the campaign on the other side has been about so far, is to create confusion and to convince the voters that this is ranked choice voting. It's not. Now, there's nothing wrong with ranked choice voting. There are 29 major cities that use it. Alaska recently passed it, and the voters there, the exit polls they did, were very, very favorable. They understood how it worked. They liked it. There are I think 6 different states that have initiatives on the ballot, and 5 of them would have ranked choice voting. There's nothing wrong with that. It, you know, it could be a step in the evolution of our primary process. But this is not, I repeat, what Proposition 140 does. 140 deals with the primary elections. Now, it has to create some guardrails with respect to what the legislature and the governor do with the general election. But that's all it does. It actually restricts the power of the legislature in terms of what they can do in the general election. So you don't have shenanigans there. So what the proposition says is that if you have in a single candidate race, you can have 2 to 5 candidates. In a multi-candidate race, you can have more, 4 to 7 or 3 candidate rates, like the Corporation Commission, 6 to 8. And we're going to leave it to the elected officials to decide what happens in the general election. But that's not what the proposition does. The focus of the proposition is on the primary. It's not top two. It's not ranked choice voting. It's open nonpartisan primaries.
Wouldn't you say, though, that the legislature really has, the legislature and governor, because they've got to agree, and right now, for the record, both parties are working against this. Not everybody in both parties, but both parties are working against this, in a large part because of they give up control. They also lose funding, because the one thing in this proposition does not allow use of state taxpayer dollars to fund any partisan primaries. But they've really, the legislature and the governor right now both don't like this, so they're probably both going to agree on something. The two options they've really got in this one is, you outlaid it, they can either pick top two, or they can go to more than top two for each elected position. And if it's more than top two, then it's in the language that it has to be a form, not defined, of ranked choice voting, some way that the voters can rank. Because you've seen arguments out there from organizations that say this could result in multiple requirements to go back to the voters. And that part of it isn't true. It will be decided on the general election day. What's your gut telling you that you think the legislature, the governors are more likely to do?
They're probably going to go with top two, because, like you say, currently the reason the political parties are against this is because incumbents don't like to have to run in a primary election. They don't want competition. You know, it's much easier to just say, I'm a Democrat, vote for me. I'm a Republican, vote for me. You know what my values are. They don't have to talk about education. They don't have to talk about infrastructure. They don't have to talk about the economy. They just run on the fact that they're a Republican or Democrat. So they don't like this. I mean, Governor Hobbs probably would like to run against Kari Lake again, because that's the kind of candidate that you get from a partisan primary. And she's against it, and as are the Republicans. Most of the opposition we're getting is from the far right of the Republican Party, but most of our funding is coming actually from business Republicans, because they realize that this creates a system where you don't have to have extremist candidates. And it forces both parties to expand the breadth of the party. I think it strengthens both parties. I mean, the parties are afraid of it because they're afraid, the incumbents are afraid of giving up their power. But the irony is that by going to an open primary system, a nonpartisan primary system, the parties are going to be strengthened because they're going to be forced to listen to voters, and they're going to be forced to take in members that might have differing views on some issues, but you have core values that could be the same.
Now, talking with Christy Simone as we were transitioning through the halls, he mentioned that he'd rather just go total nonpartisan with no, and hopefully he won't get mad for me putting these words in his mouth, but with literally no designation on the ballot of what party you're a member of. But this does not, in the partisan primaries here, those who run will have their party designation on next to their names if they choose to, correct?
If they choose. And the reason is that the polling we did found that people, I mean, if you're talking about presidential race or a senator race, a senatorial race, you know who the candidates are. You make the decision. But when you get down to some of the legislative races or Arizona Corporation Commission, a lot of times voters don't know about the candidates, and they like, you know, the party label. So we didn't want to eliminate that. What we wanted to do with this initiative is to create a system that allow, you know, it solves the primary problem. It solves the problem of candidate or elected officials being primaried because they do their job, and it allows the system to evolve. I mean, if you go back into the, you know, the 1800s, you didn't even have primaries. You know, the candidates were selected by the legislature or in the back room. You didn't have voting rights for women. So the system evolved. And what the legislature is trying to do now with Proposition, I believe it's 134, is to say, okay, we're going to freeze the current system in place, and we're never going to allow anything else or any other innovation to occur. And that's bad, because most people are not happy with the current system. If you do the polling, most people in our state do not feel that the legislature is representing them and solving the problems that they're interested in.
And Ted, for just to let you know, that's Prop 133.
Oh, 133.
And that is the proposition that was put forward by the legislature that will essentially put the current partisan primaries in place. The top vote getter, the Republican top vote getter, the Democrats are guaranteed onto the ballot, or effectively the parties that can run would be guaranteed to be on the ballot. And one of the keys on both of these propositions, or any proposition, once it passes the voters, it's very difficult to change.
Yeah, but that's not, well it's it, it This is a constitutional amendment, right? So you're right. Once the constitutional amendment passes, it's very difficult to change. So with Proposition 133, and excuse me for labeling that 134, which is also a terrible proposition, by the way, but Proposition 133 would freeze the current system. So you could never have ranked choice voting. You could never have any evolution of our current election system that people don't like. What we've done with 134 is we're allowing the system to evolve. We're not saying that this is a panacea for everything. We're trying to fix the primary problem, and we do that if it passes. But we want to allow the system to evolve, because ranked choice voting may be something that voters want to go to in the future. They may want to go to top two. We want to allow it to change and to evolve and to have a better election system. So you currently, you know, have a sort of a binary choice between, you know, when you go to the ballot, 133 would freeze the current system in place, make it constitutional, never allow ranked choice voting, never allow any innovation, and Proposition 140 fixes the primary problem and allows the evolution of our election system.
One of the challenges, I think, that's still faced by all these ballot initiatives, one, you've got 13, you're fighting for airspace and time and notice with not only the presidential campaign, but all of the big elections going on this year. Recent polling conducted about a month ago from Nova Predictive Insights, who I believe is a very strong polling firm, showed both 133 and 134 passing with similar margins, still largely undecided, though. But what was ironic was 61% of the people who voted for yes, that said they were going to vote yes on 133, also said they'd vote yes on 140, make elections fair. To me, that kind of gives a sense that people are looking for something to fix our election systems. They're unhappy with what we've got right now.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. People are unhappy. They're looking for a solution. And, you know, the key for us is to get the message out, right? And we've raised a lot of money in state, and we're actually going to have some money to spend in the general election. So expect to see ads, and we've got mailers. I encourage everyone to go to the publicity pamphlet and look at the publicity pamphlet and the arguments for and against Proposition 140, and in particular, look at the people that support 140 and the people that are against 140. So in support of 140, we have people like Rusty Bowers and Fife Symington and Terry Goddard and Paul Johnson. I mean, it's a very mixed bag. In addition, we have business organizations. SCLC has been a big promoter, as you know, of Proposition 140, as Greater Phoenix Leadership, the Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce. So you have business organizations, you have prominent Republicans, prominent Democrats, Jeff, you know, and you have a combination of supporters on both sides of the aisle that are supporting us. On the opposition, you have primarily the political ideologues that are stuck in their ideological position and that don't want to give up power. So I would encourage, if any voter is out there wondering whether they should vote for 133 or 140, read that publicity pamphlet, read who supports it, who's against it, and read the arguments for and against.
And as we get ready to go into our break, I'm going to take that moment to tell you, one, the publicity pamphlet's almost the size of a telephone book.
Yeah.
So if you're going to get informed on this, you've got to get informed on it now. The right to vote is our greatest single right we have in this country. I encourage everyone to, if you're not registered, I think you may have missed the date. That was yesterday, I believe. That was the final date, or it was in the last week. But if you're registered, get informed. Get engaged, talk to your friends, talk to people you trust, and make sure you're an informed voter. I've heard some people saying they're going to walk in and they're going to vote no all the way down. This is going to be near the bottom of all these 13 propositions will be near the bottom of the ballot. And I hear them say, oh, I'm just going to go mark no for all of them. Well, no is going to do some things that you don't want to have done. You need to take a look at these things. If you don't know, just be an informed voter. It's critical. If you have a mail-in ballot, mail it in early. Both party candidates at the highest levels of office in this state and in this country are telling you, mail them in early. All you do by walking them into the ballot box, into the polls, is create problems in counting, and that delays the results, and then everybody starts spinning. So if you chose to get an early ballot, send it in. You're listening to 1030 The Voice. This is Jump in Tucson, the engagement hour on the trusted local news and talk station. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the engagement hour. Matt, appreciate all the good tunes today. That's great. And as always, love it when you pitch in with the answer to the questions we don't know. And that's great. Tomorrow, make sure to tune in at 9 o'clock with Grant Kruger.
I'm not one of those CBS fact checkers, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Good. I've been watching you take a whole bunch of notes. I'm beginning to wonder if I'm in trouble when this is over. Tomorrow on Jump in Tucson with Grant Kruger, you're going to have state legislative representative Matt Grice, who's running in a very competitive one of those five competitive districts that Ted Hinderacher pointed out about in District 4 to continue representing the Republican Party. So he'll have that conversation with Matt as he's making a swing through Southern Arizona to try to build some more support. All right, so we've got about 4 minutes now left. You alluded to this has different impacts on the presidential primary, and it possibly, according to the ballot guide, will have impacts even on the city of Tucson elections.
Yes, the bulk of the initiative applies to state races, congressional races, and county races. It also prohibits the use of public funds for partisan primary elections, and that specifically applies to charter cities. Now, the only charter city in the state of Arizona that currently has a partisan primary election is, as you know, the city of Tucson. So how does that impact the city of Tucson, you ask? Well, if you look back at the last mayor's race or some of the last city council races, it doesn't change the vote ward only vote in the primary and citywide in the general. But you could have two Democrats that come out of any ward or the president's race or the mayor's race and go to the general election, and you could have a very different result. I mean, in the election with Steve Farley, I think he got 38% of the Democratic vote in the primary. And if he and Regina Romero go to the general election, it could be a different result. You look at the county attorney's race, you have the same dynamic that's going on there. So it does have an impact on the city of Tucson elections. And if you feel that having a little more political diversity or at least ideological diversity on the city council is a good idea, then this can help.
I think it also helps because there's a lot of disenfranchised independents and Republicans when it comes to both city and often county elections. You know, you mentioned the county attorney's race. That was one that was only two Democrats. There was not even an independent Republican. They both would have gone to the ballot this November. And now the entire county would be choosing who the county attorney is.
Exactly.
So I think that's a good example. It doesn't apply to presidential primaries. So does anything in the presidential primary change because of Prop 140?
Yes. To be consistent, if you're going to use public funds for your presidential preference election in the state of Arizona, you have to open it up to independents. So independents can choose to vote in the Republican presidential preference election or the Democratic preference election. So it allows independents to participate. Well, currently they're not allowed to participate.
So if you use the public funds for that, then independents can, but they're going to have to pull a ballot, kind of like they have to do right now to vote in any election.
Exactly. But they're allowed to participate.
Right.
They're allowed to participate. And currently they're not allowed to participate. They're shut out. The parties control it.
It actually is, I believe, led because that's the way it works. You have a lot of people that not only switch from independents and pull either a Republican or a Democratic primary ballot, you've also got people from the other party that are willing to cross because that's part of the process in the presidential primaries or in our current primary system, which leads to a whole nother set of issues that you can kind of eliminate if you just go to an open primary.
Right. And so in conclusion here, Ted, if I could, for those voters out there that are undecided, you've got Proposition 133, which is the legislative referral that would enshrine the current system in place and never allow any evolution of our election system. And you have a choice between that and 140, which is our election system, which requires open primaries. Also, I'd urge everybody to vote no on 134, which would require signature distribution requirements based on state legislative districts in order to get on the ballot as a citizens initiative. There'll never be another citizens initiative if that passes.
Ted, I appreciate you joining us today. It's been a good conversation. I know you're passionate about it. Everybody, get informed on the ballot propositions. You've been listening to KVOI 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll see you next week.